Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Last year, they were the worst, but last night... Oh, yes, the sons of John Farrell and Big Poppy did it decisively and with minimum anxiety last night, beating the St. Louis Cardinals 6-1, clinching a World Series title for the third time in 10 years, the eighth time in franchise history. From beer and fried chicken and last place to champagne and a World Series victory. Happy Halloween, Boston and New England. So we're going to spend a little time now talking about the Red Sox and what all that meant this season, this past season. Joining me now to talk about this most improbable season is Scott Thurston. He's a senior assistant sports editor at the Boston Globe. He was at the game last night. He's also a contributor to the upcoming book for Boston, From Worst to First, The Improbable Dream Season of the 2013 Red Sox. And Scott Thurston, welcome. Good to have you.
Nice to be with you, Anthony.
Also with us is our own Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game, who always looks good, even with a late-night World Series hangover. Bill, it's good to have you.
For the record, I'm bright-eyed.
You are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. So, Scott, let me start with you, because pretty much every prediction about this team was wrong. Beginning back in spring training, you know, I was looking at a piece by Dan Shaughnessy, and I'm not picking on Dan. We like him. We have him on our show. But here's a bit of what he wrote last February. Here's the reality, people. The 2013 Red Sox might be really bad. Worse, they might be really boring. And he kind of goes on from there about why. Did anyone pick the Red Sox to come even close to this kind of finish, Scott?
No, nobody saw this coming. How could you, coming off the disaster of last season? And, you know, we pick on Dan as well, but he's certainly not alone in that feeling going into the season.
Yeah, right. And, Bill, what about you? What about just how amazingly different the Red Sox performed relative to what was predicted?
Well, the one thing that people said really from the start of the season was that there was no super team out there. Mm. You know, there was no team that looked so incredibly dominant that they were just going to roll over everybody and then wait for whoever was going to play them in the World Series. So the Red Sox picked a great time to overachieve. And I think that's what they did, because nobody hits about 700 in the World Series without overachieving. I don't care if he's David Ortiz or Babe Ruth. That was just a spectacular overachievement. And their pitching was incredible. I mean, the relief pitching especially, nobody looking at the roster at the beginning of the season could have anticipated that they would be as good in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings as they ended up being as this season went along.
This is one of the things I wanted to talk about. Scott Thurston, I mean, I'm still sort of perplexed. Where did Koji Uehara come from? I mean, Boston has not seen anything like him, and that's saying a lot, because it's not as though we've had non-existent, closers in the recent past.
Right, and this all goes back to Ben Charrington and the terrific job he did assembling this this roster. And Uehara was one of the real unheralded acquisitions at the time. If you remember, Andrew Bailey and Joel Hanrahan were slotted into those closers roles. Bailey gets hurt, Hanrahan gets hurt, Uehara by default really was the third choice, slides into there, and he did not pitch like this when he was with the Rangers. This is this is one of those, you know, could he be terrific next season? But this is one of those just amazing tales of a guy who was really a journeyman reliever who turned into Mariano Rivera.
Yeah, and I'm curious about why. It's so relatively recent. I mean, because he doesn't throw like 98 miles an hour. Why is he so effective, Scott? Do you have a sense why?
You know, I think he's got that one pitch, though, Anthony. He's got kind of like that Rivera-like cutter that just kind of drops off the table. Mm. And guys, he pitches quickly. He gets in a rhythm, which we like. You know, just get up there and throw it.
Yeah.
And they don't know what's coming.
I want to talk about other reasons why this team was so good and so consistent. But first, last night's game. Scott, you were there. It was basically over in the third inning, thanks to Shane Victorino's bases-loaded double. Did you expect a little more tension last night, especially with Michael Wacha, that young flamethrower from St. Louis, on the mound?
I really did, because Walker's been terrific, and he pitched so well against them in Game 2. But I'll tell you, the place last night was electric. It really was. I've been to so many games at Fenway throughout the years, and I've never heard the place as loud as it was last night, especially capped with the Victorino hit. Just amazing.
Mm. Bill, what did you take away from last night, other than, you know, obvious great victory?
I think I took away from last night the same thing that I've taken away throughout the postseason and really throughout much of the regular season as well. This was an exceptionally easy team to root for. It was an easy team to like. It appealed to people in all sorts of different ways. And, of course, the most dramatic way was David Ortiz. People, you know, cozying up to Big Pappy and liking everything about him and being perfectly willing to forgive whatever trespasses he might have committed in the past. But it was, in all respects, it was an easy team to like. You know, it had a manager who had taken over a disastrous season before and turned it into a very workmanlike group of guys who did their job.
Well, you mentioned David Ortiz, so let's talk a little bit about him, and let's hear from him, because there were a lot of seminal moments in a lot of the postseason. So in the middle of Game 4, with the Red Sox down 2-1 against St. Louis, the team was just not hitting. Ortiz is seen in the dugout exhorting his teammates to start playing like they mean it. I'm sure he didn't use that language.
You're right.
So here he is describing that moment last night to ESPN.
You know, like, I'm always in the bench. You know, I'm the designated hitter.
Right.
And I know all my teammates, and I know how we go about the business, you know. And the one game, I kind of noticed that it was a lot of faces, you know, head down and a lot of different things that I don't usually see. And I think it was the moment to say something, to, you know, to get everybody get everybody going.
Scott Thurston, a lot of times words sort of get thrown around talking about teams like, you know, he's a clubhouse leader and good chemistry. But, I mean, this really was an example of a guy who seemed to hoist his teammates on his shoulder and sort of carry them into the World Series, or through the World Series, I should say.
Yeah, that really was an amazing moment, what Ortiz did. And it's like something you see in football, you know, routinely. But in baseball, to see that scene of Ortiz just holding court and having all of his players gathering them around and really exhorting them that this is not we're not playing the way we've played all season. This is not our team.
Yeah.
And let's get going. And of course, then the next half inning, Gomes goes out and hits the homer.
Well, speaking of Gomes, here's Johnny Gomes, who spoke after last night's game wearing a soldier's helmet and goggles to protect him from the splashing champagne. Here he is.
This is pretty special. It's the top of the top. You know, I mean, I don't know how many people in their profession get to go to the top of their top. You know, I can't really say I dreamt about it because I thought it was so far away. So I'm so happy it's reality. And it's time to cue the duck boats.
Cue the duck boats. So, Bill, Johnny Gomes, in a lot of ways, sort of, it seems like he kind of represented that group of journeyman players that Charrington went out and got and that delivered so much in such unpredictable ways.
That's what I was talking about before. I mean, they picked the right year for a lot of guys to overachieve, and they did it spectacularly well. You know, you mentioned the Red Sox hitting and David Ortiz trying to exhort the hitters to hit the way they had during the regular season. They really didn't for most of the World Series. Their average was lower than the Cardinals' average. Ortiz did most of the hitting, and then the Shane Victorinos of the world, you know, get the batting average of very low, but RBI total extraordinarily high, just hitting well in the two occasions when it was really important for him to hit well. That was the kind of series it was for the Red Sox, and everybody who roots for him can be very happy that that's the way it happened.
So let me ask you both how this sort of team gets remembered. I tweeted last night, and I was slapped immediately for it. I asked, has there ever been a more likable Red Sox team? And right away I heard back from someone and said, 2004, maybe? And
75, maybe.
Point taken. But I mean, it's hard not to feel like these guys hold a really, really special place in sort of Red Sox team history. What do you think, Scott, about
that? I think also the fact that this is not a team of superstars. And I think that endears this team to a lot of people. You know, they cleansed the clubhouse of Adrian Gonzalez and Crawford, you know, the big superstar acquisitions, and brought in guys like Victorino, Gomes, Stephen Drew, Ryan Dempster, guys who were very good major league players, but not superstars. A real team has been assembled, and then you combine the whole beard thing and the solidarity that this team showed, and of course coming at a time where the whole Boston Strong theme, the recurring theme throughout the season, and it was only fitting, really, that it ended this way.
Yeah. Finally, and it seems almost a kind of crazy time to talk about this, but what does this team look like next year? I mean, Ellsbury could well be gone. Bill, is it going to be a much different looking team?
Well, the truth of professional sports, and particularly in this case professional baseball in this day and age, is that it won't be the same team.
Yeah.
The great challenge for any general manager is how do we stay on some sort of budget and keep the guys we really want to keep and lose some guys that we can't help but losing because they're becoming free agents or they're too expensive or whatever it is, and then how do we go out and find somebody to replace them? And it doesn't matter whether you're the Red Sox or the Yankees with a great deal of money at your disposal or whether you're the Oakland Athletics with not so much money. It's a challenge. Different challenge for the rich than for the poor, but always a challenge every fall.
And Scott, with about 10 seconds left, I guess the motto is trust in Charrington.
Yes, trust in Charrington. And the key thing to watch will be, is Ellsbury back?
Is Ellsbury back? That's one of the big questions. Okay, Scott Thurston, Senior Assistant Sports Editor at the Boston Globe. Thank you so much for joining us. It was great having you.
Thank you.
And Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only Game. Bill, always a pleasure, and thanks for helping guide us through these exciting days.
Am I a regular yet?
I would say you're a regular. Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, we'll hear from the band Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down, performing in our studio. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.